We have seen, as we've taken the story of the Itasca Paper Company up to 1916, that the mill is really struggling, facing all kinds of problems that don't seem to have any solution to them, and there's even a danger that the company might not survive. And we haven't yet completed the list of problems that are being faced. Here's another really big one, and that is the growth of competition for the Itasca Paper Company, such it had never had before. By 1916, Wisconsin had 50 paper mills, 50 of them, and they had a daily production of 1,900 tons. So the next-door neighbor producing all that paper, recall that the Itasca Paper Company produces 25 tons a day, so that's minuscule compared to the amount being produced in Wisconsin. And in Minnesota by 1916, there are 9 mills with a daily capacity of 650 tons, so once again, a very large figure. But the difficulty with those larger companies in the two states is superseded for the Itasca Paper Company by the developments at International Falls under the guidance of Edward W. Backus. Backus is one of the interesting figures in Minnesota history. Because of a lack of money while he was trying to work his way through the University of Minnesota, he left school and took a full-time job with a small Minnesota lumber company. He soon acquired part and a few years later total control of the business. With company profits, he then managed to purchase additional lumber mills, and he soon had a whole string of them. Then he began acquiring extensive timber holdings in the region between Brainerd and the Canadian border. So he's getting closer to where the Itasca Paper Company takes its wood also. Working with a syndicate he had formed, Backus arranged for railroad extensions into the area, with one line eventually reaching International Falls. After some successful gold mining operations in Oregon and Alaska, he returned to Minnesota to concentrate on the International Falls area. He secured water power rights on both sides of the border, acquiring still more timberland. He instigated banking developments, another railroad, and the construction of a large dam for water power. He was making sulfite pulp at his mill. By 1916, Backus's Minnesota and Ontario Paper Company was producing 225 tons of paper per day and planning further expansion. Well, that's in direct rivalry to the Itasca mill. If continued and increased sales and profits were to be made, the Kaukauna owners would have to increase production. Another Ford Rainier would be needed, and at least doubling the daily tonnage would have to be carried out. The large tonnage produced by neighboring mills and the arrival of low-cost, duty-free newsprint from Canada in increasing quantities had to be taken into account. When Itasca Paper Company supervisor Louis Jorgensen, he's that very talented fellow who was in charge of the Ford Rainier and overall production at the mill, when he finished teaching his son Harvey the ins and outs of papermaking in Grand Rapids, Harvey promptly left for International Falls in a position with the Minnesota and Ontario Paper Company. For a young man starting a career in the paper trade in Minnesota, that is where the future appeared to be. So for the Kaukauna investors plagued with years of these problems, well, they were by no means ready to abandon their Minnesota undertaking, but they did know that they had to take action. They held their annual meeting in Grand Rapids instead of in Kaukauna, and the minutes record that matters of extensions, improvements, and additions to the plant were taken up and discussed at length. The board authorized Bossard to proceed to look into the matter and call for plans and ascertain cost of machinery and buildings necessary for adding the sulfide mill, as well as enhancing the production. The Itasca Paper Company then went on to plan the erection of a chemical pulp mill to eliminate the need for purchased sulfide, in Bossard's words, an entirely new departure here. Several other new buildings were to be erected, including a large powerhouse and a new boiler, new electrical machinery, and all kinds of other things. Bossard estimated that from $300,000 to $400,000 would be required to implement the plans. This, for a mill that had cost only $200,000 to build in the first place, was certainly very, very high. It represented a significant investment that would substantially alter the status of the Itasca Paper Company. Having put considerable effort into the plans for expansion, Bossert and the other Kaukauna owners once again found themselves frustrated by what the Grand Rapids Herald Review called the nemesis of the Itasca Paper Company, and that's low water at the mill site, because once again the federal dams had been closed. The Herald Review reported that while the matter has been taken up with the national government, the paper company has not been able to obtain any relief. Plans for expansion were then placed in abeyance, while the effects of low water on the mill were assessed anew. Bossert woefully pointed out that those plans, if adopted, would have more than doubled the capacity of the plant. When the Herald Review learned of the proposed expansion, the editor could not resist a front-page story headlined, "Our Paper Mill to be Doubled." Despite Bossert's qualification, the article quoted Bossert as explaining that while original plans may be amended, still we will make large and important additions to our plant at an early date. And the Herald Review interpreted that to mean that in the near future, the Itasca Paper Company will double the size of the mill. The article dwelt on the impact of such an expansion on wide awake and growing Grand Rapids. An additional 125 to 150 mill employees would mean 600 to 800 more population for Grand Rapids. Well, what irresponsible journalism that was. They're totally ignoring Bossert's qualifying words and putting forth all this hype, which is not helpful at all. Neither wishful thinking by newspaper writers nor management's realization of the need to increase production could offset the problems caused by low water behind the power dam. Work began on a much smaller scale than had been considered 2 years before. The four owners turned again to Wisconsin for funding. The board of directors took out a loan, and work began on some of the planned expansion. Most of that work was completed when the Herald Review reported that the stars and stripes are fluttering from the tallest chimney in northern Minnesota. And indeed, part of that expansion had been a massive new 208-foot structure towering over Grand Rapids. That allowed for additional horsepower, but paper production did not go up at all as a result of these changes. It still stayed at that 25 tons per day. Well, as we approach 1916, the mill owners faced still another round of difficulties. By that year, paper mills in the eastern United States were paying higher wages than those in the Lake States, and more importantly, operating three shifts. In Grand Rapids and other Midwestern mills, the two-shift system, remember that's the grueling 11-hour day and 13-hour night, prevailed. The machine tenders and other skilled laborers at the Itasca Paper Company objected, demanding an 8-hour day. When asked about the demand, Bossert said it was under consideration, and the Herald Review reported that he evidently did not anticipate any difficulty in reaching an agreement. The manager explained that the Itasca Company never has had any trouble with its men, and he didn't think that matters under discussion were sufficient to change that. But the matter was not settled. When the 8-hour day was not granted, the Itasca mill employees went on strike, encouraged by similar strikes at Little Falls and at the Sartell paper mills. Bossert refused to discuss the situation with the reporter from the Herald Review, but intimated that he expected the trouble to be of short duration. He was correct. The Grand Rapids Company avoided the turmoil, including the hiring of strikebreakers that had occurred at some of the other paper mills in Minnesota, and they went to the three shifts. But that entailed additional operating costs for the already hard-pressed mill. Despite Anselm Bossert's leadership, energy, work, concern, and ability, and the support and interest of the other Kaukauna backers, by 1916, the plant's daily production was just about what it had been 14 years earlier when the mill first began production. Grand Rapids remained the eager host of the all-important Itasca Paper Company, but the more observant citizens could well wonder what lay ahead. Was the mill even going to manage to survive with all these difficulties.